the only thing that was in my head, stuck in my head, was survive, survive, survive. The three common letters in that were SRV, and then I started looking into what other words you could get from SRV, and straight away it was strength, resilience, virtue, which was my mum personified. That was just my mum. And so I asked her about it and said, what do you think? And she was like, yeah, that will do for me.
Welcome to Golf Yourself Healthy, where deep, meaningful, and philosophical conversations about golf and life are par for the course. I'm your host, Chris Lynch. Join me and invited guests as we share stories around how golf is helping us to live happy, healthy, and fulfilled lives. If you'd like to join our community, please subscribe for free using the Substack link in the show notes. There you will gain access to our back catalogue of previous podcast episodes and journal articles, as well as exclusive member-only content. At GYH, we thrive on hearing inspiring stories. Stories of individuals who are using golf as a source of strength, a means of overcoming adversity, and ultimately as an outlet to improving our health and well-being. Today's guest, John Payton, fits perfectly into that category. Today, John golfs in memory of his late mother, Shirley, who lost her life following a brave battle with secondary breast cancer. Before she passed and during her treatment, John had been introduced to golf and was hooked instantly, offering him an invaluable escape and a relief from the personal challenges he was going through at the time. With a passion for golf emerging, coupled with an entrepreneurial mindset and a fervent desire to honour his mum and give back to those who had helped her and John's family throughout her treatment, he came up with a business idea. Founding SRV Golf in October 2023, John has created a golf brand with deep meaning and purpose, with its acronym SRV standing for Strength, Resilience and Virtue, all of which are values and skills which John has developed throughout his life, both in and out of golf, and which have carried him through the hard times. SRV sell high-quality, affordable golf products, with their flagship product offering being a Cabretta leather glove. Proceeds of every sale go to a selection of specially selected cancer and mental health charities, all of which hold special meaning to John, and which are doing honourable work to help others to live with or overcome challenges in life. As you listen to John, you will hear his passion and his vision for his business shine through. As ever, it's an uplifting story and one which I'm sure will motivate you all to go out there and embrace the rough whilst always cherishing the fairway. Without any further ado, let's tee off and jump into the conversation. I'm going to kick this off. I'm going to ask you, John, first and foremost, do you remember your first ever experience of playing golf?
I don't remember my first ever experience of golf, but I do remember my first round of golf. And it was like, you know, it was a stereotypical hacking round a council golf course with a couple of my mates, no idea what to do, not dressed in golf clothes, just trying to figure it out. But I got the bug straight away doing it. But no, I mean, I kind of started golf a little bit later, probably my kind of late 20s. So it was about 2021, just towards the end of lockdown. I wish I could say I was one of those people that started off when I was 6 or 8 and joined a club, played the junior comps and just immersed in golf. But I wasn't, but I found it later in life, which I think is why it is to me what it is now. I think if I'd started when I was younger, it would be a totally different game for me than it is just now. You know, like it all kind of, the timing and how I came into golf was, I mean, I suppose you could say it was kind of meant to happen that way, but would I have the same love for it if I'd been playing and getting lessons since I was young? Maybe not, but yeah, first ever round, my mate went and bought a starter pack, £300 golf set, basically. And I went and chapped my grandpa's door because I remember when he retired, he had got himself fitted for some clubs. So I knew he had some nice clubs. I went and chapped him up and, you know, can I get a wee shot of your clubs to go and play? And, but you know what? See, as soon as I knew I was getting the clubs and I was going to start playing, like I literally got so immersed in it. I started watching golf content. I started, trying to price up this, price up that, figure out where the good golf courses are, trying to remind myself who the good golfers were as well, and just And I ended up, by the time when we went to play the first round, I probably knew, I don't know. I mean, I knew a lot about golf, put it that way. Or at least I thought I did. When I look back now, it was nothing. But, you know, like I really, really immersed myself in before I went to play. So I really built up the excitement before the first round. So, which is good because, you know, when you probably hit about 130 odd, you might not want to come back and play. But I think I was just so excited to keep going and keep going and keep going.
Are you the sort of person who, because I'm quite an all-in sort of person, right? So if I latch on to something and I really love it and I've got hooked on it, you know, whether it's addictive personality or whatever you want to call it, and then I just kind of go all at it. So are you like that? Or is there, you know, what was it, would you say, about golf, I suppose, is the question that really hooked you in?
Well, first of all, yeah, I'm exactly like that. I'm all in. Like, there's no point in doing things in half is something I've always kind of tried to live by. But yeah, like, when I get into something, I'm really, really into it. Like, I'll even go back to music. When I get into, like, a particular type of music, I'm like, it's all day, every day for a period of time, and then it moves on. But golf's one of the ones that just stuck. But yeah, it's just, as I say, there's no point in doing things in half.
Absolutely. I guess maybe leading into SRV, when was it that you had a light bulb for that? A light bulb go off?
For the brand, my light bulb moment for the brand, I mean, there's a few, like, to kind of go back, I mean, there'd been a long time, I'd wanted to start a business for so long, and I had tried multiple different things. I just had no passion for them. And there was things I was trying. I'd always kind of worked a job and then had something else on the side that I was working towards to try and build up to something. But there was nothing that I'd really had that passion for. So I'd started a couple of wee online things on Amazon and stuff. But then when I started playing golf and I was trying to think about a business idea or what to do, I was like, I need to do something in golf, because I knew that if I had the passion for it, it would see me through the hard times when it gets, you know, when you have doubts and when things don't go your way and when the going gets tough and all that kind of stuff. So I knew if I did it in golf that I would at least enjoy that part of it and it would keep me going. But I suppose that the light bulb moment for the brand and deciding what it should be or what it would eventually turn into was with my mum, basically during my mum's cancer battle. And so, like, kind of going back a little bit, when I started playing golf, it was during a time where I was kind of mid to late 20s, and we'd spent all our early 20s, you know, going out at the weekend and stuff and being with friends. And then lockdown kind of slowed everything down again. I'd also been playing football before that, but then lockdown put a stop to everything and a lot of things changed. And obviously you were looking at being a bit more active and trying to focus a bit on your mental health and keeping fit and healthy. And so it all kind of happened at the one time, and my mum's cancer started to get quite bad just as I started playing golf. So, I mean, probably a few rounds in, and I played a nice golf course, and I thought, this is just, like, it totally switches you off, because there's so much going on in my personal life at the time, and a really busy work life and all that. So the light bulb moment really was just realising how good it was for me, how much it was an escape.
Shall we talk a bit about your mum? Because I personally feel like, you know, ultimately resilience and overcoming adversity is something which is very central to my brand, and it's clearly very central to your brand. And you've just referenced it yourself, but your mum has been and continues to be an inspiration for what you do now.
Yeah, 100%, mate, 100%. I mean, she's the reason that the brand became what it was is purely because of her. She was the strongest person I've ever met, and she was genuinely one of these people who, everywhere she went, she lit up the room. She was quite famous for having more friends than hot dinners, and, you know, all that kind of thing. And, like, everybody was involved. But, like, one of the things that I kind of remember, and this was also around about the time when I was trying to come up with idea for the brand. My mum had, she'd just been on holiday with us, and she was at this point, she'd cancer, secondary breast cancer, and it spread to her back and her bones, but it was really causing her pain in her back, and it was kind of debilitating her. She couldn't walk very well, but we managed to get her out on holiday with us, and she kind of, you know, hobbled around with her little walker, and she was on the scooter and stuff, and it never got her down once. And she just wanted to be there because my daughter was there, and it was the first holiday with my daughter, and she just wanted to be there, and she was just so strong and happy throughout it. But what actually happened was, when we got back about a week later, she kind of really went downhill. She lost vision in her eye closed over, and she literally couldn't walk. She could hold herself up to try and get onto something to get to the toilet and stuff, but she really, really went downhill from that point. And at this point, she'd already had her secondary diagnosis about 4 years previous to that, and the kind of life expectancy for her diagnosis was about 4 years maximum. And at this point, obviously, we were terrified, and we knew my mum would have been terrified as well, but she went to the Beatson in Glasgow to get some care in there and to get looked after. And I remember driving to the hospital, and we had just came back, and she had already been in hospital, so this is the first time I was going to see her. And I mean, I'm walking in there and I'm expecting to see this broken shell of a woman, and instead I walk in, and before we even get to the room, the staff are coming out and going, "Oh, you must be Shirley's boy," and "Oh, she's got us all laughing and already telling stories about Mum." And it's typical because I'm used to going to the shops and bumping into someone who knows my mum but doesn't know me, and you know, so I'm used to that, but I didn't expect it at this point. So we walk into the room, and there's the person in the bed beside her, and my mum's sitting there talking away to her, one eye closed, laughing, sharing tins of roses and stuff with each other, and it's like everybody's taking me in and pulled in a chair, and I remember, like, I just couldn't believe how strong she actually was, because we'd seen it for so long, but like I knew this was like, I suppose, the beginning of the end for her, and yet she still had that big smile, the big crazy laugh that she's got, and she still had that attitude where she wanted to help other people, make other people feel comfortable. And you know, that was just the way that she was. And like shortly after that, she got moved to the hospice. She came home for a bit, and then she had to go into the hospice because it was just kind of progressively getting worse. And it was exactly the same in there. Every member of staff wanted to come round to my mum's room because mum would make them laugh and feed them, and she'd have us all running about after the staff. So around about that time, I was planning the brand, and I couldn't really come up with a name. And the only thing, I mean, it was not really thinking of brand names, but the only thing that was in my head, stuck in my head, was survive, survive, survive. And I knew that I had to make it something about my mum. So the word survive was kind of there. And then I was thinking, well, my mum's striving. So like she's trying to strive. And I had survive. And the three common letters in that were SRV. And then I started looking into what other words you could get from SRV. And straight away it was strength, resilience, virtue, which was my mum personified. That was just my mum. And so I asked her about it and said, "What do you think?" And she was like, "Yeah, that'll do for me. That'll do for me." And that sealed the deal. So obviously with that, I mean, I knew that making the brand, as I said, it needs to be something that I'm passionate about. And seeing the care that she was given at the Beatson and from various different charities throughout the full experience, but especially kind of towards the end, is when you really realised how incredible these people are and how incredible these charities are. So I knew we had to do something to give back to them.
Have you read or heard of a book called Start With Why by Simon Sinek?
I haven't, no. But I'll need to give that a try.
The central message that he gives is, so he's a really famous speaker. He's like got one of the most watched TED Talks of all time. And someone gifted me a copy of the book. And basically what he says is there are hugely successful brands all over the world that are very, very good and spend millions, billions on marketing, telling you how great their product is, why you should buy it, all the benefits it will give your life, but they don't tell you why they do what they do.
Yeah.
And his theory is that the brands that have got a clear why behind them and a story will last the test of time, and it actually strikes an emotional chord with the customer as well. Yeah. You know, so I think you're onto something. Basically, I'd like to think you and I have got that upper hand in a way,
yeah,
because you've got a really emotive story that people can buy into, if you know what I mean. So
yeah, I mean, like, there must be loads of brands that start and fail, businesses that start and fail within the first year. And look, the way I look at it with the brand is we've still not done anything yet. We're still only the beginning, and that's what the attitude I want to always keep with it. We're only at the beginning, but the point in that is that, you know, having that why just makes it easier when it gets tough. But
yeah,
it's also like you say, when I started playing golf, right, the first couple of things I noticed were that, first of all, really, really expensive. It was really expensive to start, especially if you're starting with nothing. But even as you're trying to maintain playing golf, it gets expensive. And like you say, you look at brands that tell you the reason why. Now, I don't know some of the major golf brands. I'm not sure what a lot of their why is. But all I know is that the only thing I was going by when I was trying to select which golf products to wear was price and style and performance in certain aspects. But there was nothing that kind of stood out to me. So that was, again, what led me to doing that. Like, why can't a golf brand really, really resonate with people? Why can't the golf brand be, why can't it have the same quality with better value? Why can't it have the same quality with better value, but have amazing core values and help people and build things? Because like, I definitely see this brand as being far more than a product business.
Mm.
Further down the line, there's so many things that I would like to be able to do.
So I'm conscious that I've almost made you, and like, I've led us down a path where we've almost danced around SRV Golf. We've talked a wee bit about it, but do you just want to tell us, what do we need to know? What's the, you know, what do you do? What are your products? What's your offering?
Yeah, right. So SRV Golf is basically a golf brand that stands for strength, resilience, virtue, right? It's the embodiment of my mum. That was the reason that I started the brand. But the main product that we sell is a golf glove. And one of the main kind of things about that is that for every single product that we sell, £1 goes to cancer and mental health charities, right? But it's basically, it's affordability without sacrificing quality. So the golf gloves that we sell are premium Cabretta leather, AAA grade. So it's as good as any glove that you would pay over £20 to £25 for. The thing with ours as well is that they're far more durable. So there's a lot of performance aspects, and we've put a lot of development into making the glove fit and last as long as it does. So there's a really, really strong product there. But the other side of it is, of course, the charitable aspect and what we want to do. I mean, our mission is for people to use golf as an outlet to support cancer and mental health. We want to raise as much money as we can to support these charities, you know, and we want to help people along the way while doing it. As I said a couple of minutes ago, it's not just about selling a product and donating money. I personally want to get involved in offering services to charities, hosting different events that hopefully we can make them free or as cost effective as possible, for people to come together, share their experiences, and, you know, just create a whole big community around it. And I know a lot of people talk about creating a community and stuff, but like a proper, real, in-person one all around the country, you know, different events, different charities, helping them out. That's the kind of main goal from the brand side.
I could totally relate to, thanks for that, John. I mean, I could definitely, I can relate to quite a number of things you just said there, but this point on community, I'm in the same boat in a way. You know, I think it takes time to build one. And in reality, you know, it's a word that gets used a lot, isn't it? But I think it, because how long has SRV been going now?
We started selling in October 2023.
Okay. So, I mean, I'll ask you a bit more in a minute about kind of, you know, looking back on what's now like a year and a half in business, kind of what have been your successes, what are the things you're most proud of? And maybe even I'll ask you as well, like, I dare say that your strength, resilience and virtue has actually developed quite a lot within the last year and a half, because it's hard running a business, isn't it?
Sure.
But whilst you've got a day job as well, let's not forget. So I guess you're saying that in time, obviously, you have hope that you'll be able to put events on and actually physically get together in person with people. And that's where community will really start to thrive and build. But I dare say that in the year and a half you've been going, and I know from things you've told me before, and anyone that can go on your SRV Instagram can see, you've built up a network of people that are really, you know, ambassadors for your brand. And I guess where I'm going is, if you're saying that SRV stands for using golf as an outlet to basically overcome these challenges in life, have you got any particularly like sort of striking, compelling stories of people that you've come across that have really validated that? You know, have you worked with anyone, or have you had people reach out and go, John, thanks so much. Like, that's exactly what golf is for me. I wonder if you've got any stories you've come across.
Yeah, like a couple of examples. I mean, yourself was one of them. I mean, you remember when you reached out, when you kind of messaged me after you heard a bit of the story. When I heard your story, it got me incredibly emotional. And we do get messages like this all the time. A lot of people kind of, sometimes just in the comments, but private messages. I've spent numerous nights, I mean, like late at night, responding to people because they've sent out a message to say that they're so glad to see something like this in golf, and that they've struggled and had their own issues. And if I can, I like to obviously take the time to speak to them and hear their story. So there has been loads. I mean, one recently, I won't obviously name who anybody is, but someone recently just went through a bit of a major breakup, and literally speaking to them today, and they were just talking about how golf has gave them a purpose. Like, they were saying, you know, like they could be in the house mumping and moaning and not sure what to do, but every day they're just getting out or playing golf or getting to the range, and it's ticking them over. And they're just talking about how many friends and stuff that they've met through golf. And that's just one of many people who reach out with different stories and just thanking us and telling me their side of how what golf has done for them. And it's brilliant, because that's what we want to do. We want to get people talking. We want to kind of break that stigma and let people know that it's all right to talk about it, and that especially through golf, because the golf community is a community, but there's loads of different communities within that. And I know we're hating this word community because it's everywhere, but when it's true, it's true.
But you're right though, it's the golf world is a small world, isn't it? You've probably learned that in the time you've been in it, and I'm learning it pretty quickly too. So massively.
It's but yeah, it's just it's amazing for people to come together like that, and you know, to reach out to us and share the story, because that is the idea of what we're trying to do. So it does validate it when people come out and let us know that they're thankful for what we're doing. Or, you know, we get loads of messages from so many people as well that I've met that are doing amazing things, and I'd love to try and, you know, get more of a spotlight on them as well. Because, you know, someone recently who they set up a charity football match, but it's now turned into like weekly football meetups and golf. And they're doing, I think they're running their second annual golf, day this year. And I mean, that person as well has just shared their really horrendous story with me just in the past week. And the message is telling me that how, you know, his golf is keeping him going, and running the charity that they've got is keeping him going. It's keeping him sane. And he's told me that he lost his mum, and similar to myself, obviously, and he started that straight away. And that's what's kept him going. So yeah, it's just brilliant. It's great to hear all the stories.
That's amazing. I'm keen to speak more about, you know, what you've learned in the time that you've kind of been in the golf business world, right? Operating in the golf business environment is quite tough, I would imagine, because you're competing against other big established brands who sell the same or very similar products to what you do. So let's first start with, you know, how have you found it, like, trying to just make a breakthrough in that industry?
Yeah, it's very, very challenging. Golfers especially are very fickle, and they like what they like. It might be superstition, it might just be habit. They've played a good round that day wearing a glove. But also, it's hard to prove the quality. And the big brands obviously are known for proving quality. One of the challenges for me is you need to find a way to prove that quality. And the best way for me to do that is to get gloves on people's hands. So that's something that I've really tried to focus on doing, and then getting the right people to share that story. So obviously golf's changing and the golf business is changing. People are opening their minds up now a lot more to independent brands, which obviously is great. Even pro shops and stuff like that. Like, obviously for me, a massive goal for me is to be in pro shops, be in high-end pro shops, you know, maybe be stocked in some of the major retailers. But the challenges that you've got in that sense is that the big brands' margins are crazy. They've got crazy margins, but at the same time, we don't have the big overheads that the big brands have got. So that makes it a lot easier. And also, I feel like as an independent brand, there's a lot more freedom of expression in how you want to market it or how you want to position yourself. For example, Titleist or whatever, they might not want to speak on a particular subject in case it alienates a massive part of their customer base, or they think, oh, you know, it's this or it's that. But we're in the position where we are creating ourselves as we grow. People are a part of that, so it's great to be able to actually listen to the people who are wearing the gloves and supporting the brand, and they can kind of give feedback on what we're doing or make suggestions. And it does create that different feeling for a golfer. And it's one of the things where people always say, you know, people buy people. So if you can tell the story right and people understand that you have, because we've got a really strong USP, I think, and people really buy into that. And our USP is something that obviously it does affect, unfortunately, most people these days. So it's just about changing people's minds and changing people's perspectives on the actual quality of the product. Because, you know, telling the story, people really engage with the story. And some people really, really love it. And some people, it wouldn't affect whether they use us or not. They're looking for performance. But so that's where the getting the product on people's hands comes into it. Because genuinely, like 99.9% of people have came back and absolutely loved it, said that it's either better or it lasts longer. You know, no one's came back with anything bad about the glove. So that's something that we just need to keep doing. We need to keep getting the gloves on hands, and people will realise that the product's great. What I mean, like, looking at it from an outsider, you can go, yeah, right, they're doing great things. They've got a great meaning behind them. They've got a great price point. But at the end of the day, if the product isn't good, then people are only going to buy once. That's one of the things. But, you know, some of the other challenges that you face is getting into pro shops, like, and getting into retail. The amount of places I've been to where sometimes the pro shops have got a stock of gloves, right, where they buy clubs. So they're like an exclusive seller of clubs for this company. So as a sweetener for selling the clubs, they get gloves for next to nothing, like pennies, and still, you know, they're selling them at £20, £22, £18 or whatever it is. And from knowing what they're actually, the pro shops are having to pay, or sometimes they're getting some for free, they get X amount for free. So trying to compete in that sort of market is difficult, because although we have a good enough margin to be in these pro shops and be in these places, it's, you know, some of the guys, why would they take something off the shelf where they're essentially getting it for free? Why would they remove that and sell my product instead of them? Because although I'm saying, you know, the story of the brand and what we're trying to do has great meaning for people, but not all the time. With pro shops, it's about margins, profit, it's business. And so that's it. So, you know, but we, I mean, in saying that, we are in, you know, where I think we've got four separate stockists now. So there's no reason why others won't join in on that. But so that's one of the things that's been quite difficult to navigate. But we're finding ways to get around about that.
What's your kind of product range at the moment? So gloves are obviously the big one, but
yeah,
hats, other what have you got at the moment, and what's the plans for the future?
Yeah, so obviously the main product, the flagship product, is the Cabretta leather glove. Okay, so we've got two different versions of that. We've got the original blue logo and we've got the white logo one, which just looks really, really sleek. And the white one's actually becoming a bit more popular than the original one that we set out with. But these are the flagship products, and we are essentially a glove brand. So from that, we need to add to the glove range. So ideally, we want to have kind of different tiers. So we'd like to have a kind of entry level glove for new golfers who maybe aren't sure, maybe don't want to spend as much money, or maybe don't realise the benefits of using a Cabretta leather glove to, for example, a synthetic leather glove. So we'd like to have an entry-level glove for that. What we'd also like to do is add more of a kind of tour player's glove. So the glove we've got just now, it's kind of built for durability. It's the most suitable glove for every level of golfer. We've got professionals that wear them playing in tournaments and love them. We've got, and they'll also maybe use a glove for training because it will last so much longer. That's one of the main kind of aspects of them, is that they're so durable. So we've got long drive champions who will use them because when they practice, they'll usually go through a glove every one or two sessions because they're gripping it so hard, they're swinging so fast. Whereas we're fixing those problems with how durable our gloves are. But in the same sense, an entry-level golfer could easily wear this and get all the benefits that the pros can, and that's where we kind of try and position it. But to add to that, we would like to add maybe a thinner glove where you are just going to get that maximum feel. You won't get the durability like you don't get in, like, you know, the Tours Players gloves at the moment. But, you know, we want to get that next level because we do want to see some SRV golf gloves playing at the Masters next year. So we do need to get that one done. We want to add to the range as well, you know, rain gloves, winter gloves and kids gloves, because some of the junior golfers that I've met through this are incredible golfers. Like, you seriously not been able to...
Yeah, annoyingly good. Yeah, juniors. It makes me look and go...
Yeah, yeah, annoyingly good. Like, honestly, like, some of them that I've met, it blew my mind, and I was like, wow, I need to, you know. And like, I've went and got like the smallest ladies gloves that we can get to, just to try and get gloves to fit them, just so they are kind of underserved in that sense. So I would like to have like a premium juniors glove as well, so that all these aspiring professional junior golfers can feel, you know, so they don't feel like they're having to, you know, as I say, they're underserved. They're struggling to find the things that the pros and that their heroes are wearing. So I want to be able to offer them the same level of quality that the adults and their heroes can wear on the course. Aside from the gloves, but we do have caps as well. You know, we regularly do beanies and hoodies and stuff as well. But yet, the focus is mainly on the gloves, though.
I think listening to you talk about the gloves, it's very clear. It's kind of like balls in a way as well. It's like you've got to, there are golfers out there who will be happy to have any glove because like they need to wear one, or, you know, whereas there's customers who, golfers who actually really pay attention to detail, right?
Yes.
If I'm hearing you right, something you've learned in the last year and a half is preferences of your customer, of golfers, and you're kind of responding to that now by expanding the range. And just so you were saying, you donate some of the proceeds from every sale to, there were two charities you said, so do you want to say a quick word on that?
Yeah, so it's
who they are and what they
yeah
do?
So it's actually four charities, but we're adding a fifth. So at first when we started, so I'll go through them one by one. So Make Seconds Count, which is a secondary breast cancer charity, they're all over the UK, but they were one of the ones that during my mum's cancer battle, kind of before she got really bad, they done so much to look after my mum, and they gave her that sense of community that she needed. So they do, I mean, they fund research, but they also do things like, you know, events, tea days, kind of, you know, coffee and cake mornings and stuff, and all these people get together, and all the people that are involved in charity are incredible. I've met a lot of them, and I've been to a couple of their events, and you know, the work they do is amazing. And I know that my mum had a really, really strong love for them, so that was the first one that we decided to go with. And likewise, sticking with the cancer charities, McMillan, obviously most people tend to know about McMillan, and they know how much work they put in, you know, funding research and helping people. So, you know, that's, and they did do a lot for my mum as well at the start. But one of the ones that we've added recently is St Andrew's Hospice, which is the local hospice that my mum spent quite a bit of time at before she passed. And that's, you know, I kind of mentioned them earlier, like the staff in there were just incredible, and they done so much. And honestly, the strength and resilience of those people are a major part of why the brand is what it is. So yeah. And then on the mental health side, we have CMH, which is mainly a Scottish-based mental health charity, and they cover kind of all aspects of mental health. You know, they've got various things that they do, you know, respite help, but they're also one of the kind of first ports of call for people who are maybe struggling. And likewise, like most of them, they do lots of events, but you know, we want to fund them. And the other mental health charity is Chrissy's House. So they're basically a suicide prevention charity. They offer respite care, and they've got kind of different locations where people who are feeling suicidal can go and attend, and you'll get well looked after. So yeah, these charities are just a lot, some of them local, some of them national, but yeah, they do amazing work, and it just means a lot to be able to try and help them as much as possible.
Yeah, that's great. As I would do with any of my guests, John, I'm going to make sure that in the show notes for this episode, there's links to, you know, do you want to give a call out to where, so you, I guess you've got an SRV website, you've got an Instagram page, are those the main places you would encourage my listeners to go and have a look at?
Yeah, so srvgolf.com, and then we're on every platform, just at srvgolf. So you can find us there, and if you go on the website, you can find some information on the charities that we support. And obviously, I'll give you some links that we can put in for that go directly to the charity. But of course, any support that comes to us, we'll be supporting them as well.
Well, we could probably wrap it up at this point, John. I can't wait for that day when I see one of the big dogs teeing it up at the Masters with an SRV glove on.
Rory next year. Wait, just you wait and see. Rory will be wearing an SRV next year.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please remember to subscribe using the Substack link in the show notes to become the latest member of our Golf Yourself Healthy community. There, you will be able to exchange thoughts and comments on today's episode with other community members, whilst also getting access to exclusive member-only content. Until our next episode, always remember to embrace the rough and forever cherish the fairway.